Hi there. Welcome to Just to Be Nominated, a podcast about movies that is distributed by Lee Enterprises. The show is hosted by me, Chris Lay, the podcast operations manager for Lee, along with Bruce Miller, the editor of the Sioux City Journal, and Jared McNett, a reporter for the Globe Gazette in Mason City, Iowa. So it has been 2 weeks since the last time that we recorded an episode, and in that time, as you are all aware, things have changed. We had originally planned on spending this time talking about Craig Zobel's film, The Hunt, but in lieu of all the stuff, we decided to change things up, and instead, we had a chat about some of our favorite comfort movies. Because who doesn't need to be comforted right now? You can find links in the show notes to online places where you can stream the movies that we talk about, at least as of the day the episode drops. So make sure you click on through and find them there. Anyway, here is the show.
What, for you guys, was the last movie that you were able to go and see in theaters before, like, that was no longer an option? Because mine's Invisible Man.
I'm the same. Yeah, Invisible Man was the last one I saw. Yeah.
Mine was probably Onward.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, but I, again, I've been lucky. I've been able to look at things online, on streaming things. But, you know, a lot of these things, they're not putting dates on them. So what good is it? You know, I can talk to myself about it, and that's it.
One admittedly, like, small concern I have, and again, this is very small in the scheme of things, but as it relates to pop culture, is I'm wondering if this is all going to end up hastening just, like, the death of movie theaters anyway for everything to become streaming, because now would be the perfect excuse for that to kind of finally actually happen.
I hope not, because I like the communal experience.
Yeah.
And they can do things that I can't do in my house. And look, we are all tired of being in our homes.
Yeah.
So the idea that we can go out and see something or do something, I think would be a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, let's get into that. So what we did this week was we all went through and picked five movies each that we consider to be comfort movies, which, you know, are movies that you put on, it just, you know, envelops you like a nice warm blanket, or you know, it's like hanging out with a good friend. If you want to jump in, we can.
Yeah, I will.
Go, Jared. Let's hear what. How many are horror films? I bet they all are.
Only one of them, and it's kind of a horror hybrid. So my first pick is one of the most moving movies that Disney's ever released, and that's 1999's The Straight Story, directed by David Lynch.
Oh, man. Yes.
I think, like, when a director as talented as him kind of dips into the more, like, emotional sort of stuff, it can be really effective. And this one, which is his only G-rated movie and his only movie for Disney, definitely qualifies. For anybody that doesn't know, it's a true story about an aging World War II vet who has failing health. And then once he hears that his brother's, like, recently had a stroke, he decides to travel, like, several hundred miles from Iowa to Wisconsin on a riding lawnmower to visit him. And David Lynch actually filmed the movie, like, along the route that the titular character, Alvin Strait, took. And the actor playing him, Richard Farnsworth, actually had cancer while he was filming. He was terminally ill with cancer. And even with that, like, a little bit of heaviness, the movie itself is still just this, like, absolute beautiful dream. And you wind up feeling better about people after you watch it.
Yeah.
So that's one that I never tire of watching because of just how, like, beautifully breezy of a movie it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so out of character for Lynch. And I mean, it's one of those movies. It doesn't really quite, like, it's got a genre because it's a drama, but it's so much more than that. I don't know. Like, it's just, it's very, it's wonderful. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but that movie's fantastic.
In some ways it's his weirdest movie, which seems like preposterous to say, but because it's so different from everything else he's done, it just sticks out like a sore thumb, but in the best possible kind of way.
Yeah. And it's based in truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually part of the route that guy took went past not too far from Mason City, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys are in Iowa and I'm in Wisconsin. So if you ever want to, you know, hop in a, hop on some lawn equipment and come visit.
We are
there. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Chris, you want to give your number five? We can do like a roundabout.
Once we did this, the first movie that jumped into my head was The Nice Guys.
Ooh,
movie that came out in 2016. It's directed by Shane Black. It's got Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. And it is just this really wonderful noir that is somehow all about the interactions of the pornographic film industry and Detroit big three automakers. And yeah, it is so much fun. Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling just bounce off each other in this beautiful way. But it's, I think, one of the aspects of that unites a lot of the movies that I ended up coming up with is that it has a very dense plot that has a ton of twists and turns. And just about every single time that I watch it, there is some new thing, or there's a, you know, that I catch, or it's something that I've completely forgotten about, you know, as, because it's impossible to hold the whole plot in your head at any given point. And it's just, so it's like every single time you watch it, there's almost a, you know, seeing it for the first time mentality. But yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. Very late 70s, very noirish. I mean, it's the same guy who wrote and directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which has almost made the list. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of those movies. Anytime Ryan Gosling like plays an absolute dick in a movie, it like always makes me laugh. So whether it's that one or The Big Short or even Crazy Stupid Love, he's so damn enjoyable when he's just like unrelentingly awful.
Yeah. And that was one actually, to watch Contagion, I got a subscription to Cinemax through like Amazon Prime or whatever, where it's just like, I don't know, it's like $9 a month. And that was where I watched The Nice Guys. So that's actually streaming on Cinemax. And recommend it very highly. Yeah, it's one that I feel like, it came and went. I was really excited when it came out. And then it's, I think, going to get, you know, a bigger life on you know, rental and DVD and whatever. Become kind of a cult thing, but man, it's just fantastic. What about you, Bruce?
I picked Tootsie. It's on Netflix right now. You can see it, and it really holds up. It's one of those films that you think, oh, I bet it's going to be really dated, and it's not. It's the one with Dustin Hoffman where he dresses up as a woman to be able to get a job, and he learns more about himself. And even though it's set in the 80s, it really has some fun lines, and it's good. It's really good. And Jessica Lange won the Oscar, and you can see why. She's very subtle, and she's funny. And Dustin should have won, too, but he was up against Gandhi, so I don't think you could beat Gandhi. You know? And you can get it on Netflix.
Yeah, I would also say, that made my short list as well. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I think Elaine May, I want to say, did some
script work. A little bit of it.
Yeah. Bill Murray also was in that in a really, really great small part.
And uncredited. He wouldn't take credit for that. And
yeah,
it's one of his best movies.
It really is. It's absolutely fantastic. And I mean, the larger sentiments that it has, you know, to say about, you know, romantic relationships and, I mean, honestly, you know, gender roles to a point. I mean, like you said, really have managed to stay pretty timeless. I mean, it's really grown very well, I think.
Last year it was on Broadway as a musical, and it didn't quite work as well, but because it almost looked sexist in the way it was presented. But sure. I think the movie is still worth watching.
Now, which movie would you guys? I think I know your answer, but which movie do you guys like more between that and Mrs. Doubtfire? Since obviously they're
Come on,
Mrs. Doubtfire was a pretender.
I really, really liked Mrs. Doubtfire, though. And if anyone's ever, anyone's not seen it, on YouTube, there's a trailer where they recut Mrs. Doubtfire as a horror movie, and it's so damn funny to watch. Like, that's one of those YouTube videos that'll never not make me laugh, because it's very easy to recut that movie as a horror movie.
Is Mrs. Doubtfire on your comfort list?
No, it is not. No, no, no.
Okay.
No.
I couldn't tell if that's what you were segueing into or not.
No. Well, my next one is my my lone comedy, and it's a little bit out of season, but it's 1985's horror comedy Fright Night, which was directed by Tom Holland, who also wrote Psycho 2, and he wrote and directed the original Child's Play. At this point, it's like a pretty well-established like cult classic with horror movies. It's a boy who cried wolf, or I guess a boy who cried bat story about a horror movie loving nerd who has a vampire played by a like very suave Chris Sarandon living next door. It's a really funny movie. It's got some pretty good scares in it and some great special effects. And then the thing I appreciate about it the most is that it just works really well as a love letter to like cheesy B-level movies. Yeah. Because the old man that ends up befriending like the kid in the movie and like sticking up for him is this like Elvira type of like late night horror movie host who's like near the end of his career and has been in just like 200 movies, none of which anyone really cares about. And so that part of it is like very like sentimental in a wonderful kind of way. Yeah. It's a pretty quick watch and it's pretty easy. And I think it's free on like Crackle. I was checking earlier. So yeah. Big fan of that one. I've probably watched that one about 10 or 12 times at this point.
That's one I've only seen that one once, but I definitely need to go back because it, like you said, it really is. It's fun and it's not super scary. Like, I don't know if I would take, you know, like a 6-year-old to go see it, but it's, yes. You know, it's like it's a really good, like PG-13 ish, you know, like kind of horror vibe. It's nice.
It's one of those ones that it would be a good entry way in for people that are just trying to start to get into horror movies, like that kind of movie, or like Monster Squad or Creep Show.
Yeah.
Like ones that are like kind of like kinder trauma type level horror movies.
The next one that I had was Logan Lucky.
Oh, very nice.
The Steven Soderbergh movie from 2017 with I think it was kind of pitched or not pitched as, but what, Ocean 7-Eleven? It's a very
That's a line that comes up in the movie even.
Yeah. It's a bunch of guys pulling a heist on the Charlotte Motor Speedway, which I was born and raised in Charlotte, so I've actually spent a lot of time out at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And yeah, it's another word. I mean, the plot is so dense and it works really, really well. It's a ton of fun. It's really colorful. All the, you know, the cars are really fun. It's very enjoyable.
Is that the one with Daniel Craig?
Yeah, and Daniel Craig, his accent in there is not good.
Well, it's one of those ones where you first think, oh my God, he's playing other things than what I'm used to seeing him play.
I hope that Daniel Craig now, just between that and Knives Out, is only doing Southern accents now in movies, because I would totally be okay with that.
It's that Midwestern accent we really have to work on, right?
That one's a little trickier.
I took a really kind of an odd beat one for the next one. It's called The Young Offenders. Do you remember that?
No. I don't think I've ever even heard of that one.
Oh, you must look for it. It's two Irish kids who are trying to escape. They have all this cocaine, and they're trying to get out, and it's very, very funny. They have to take bicycles. And I found after I watched it, I wanted to find out more about the real case that inspired it. And I wanted to find out more about these two actors. And I went down a deep hole and started watching some of their other movies just because I thought they were so fascinating, because they reminded me exactly of what I thought these kids would be like. Stupid and naive. And look at it. It's real fun. It's one of those ones where you go, oh, wow, where has this thing been sitting all these years?
Oh, and it looks like there's a show that spun off of it, too.
Right.
I'm going to add that one to my list right now, actually. This looks fantastic.
Sometimes you can't understand what they're saying because the way they speak.
But, put some subtitles on.
Yeah. Subtitles on. That's a very good thing.
They're like the only times I ever usually, well, actually that's not true. I have subtitles on all the time, no matter what anymore. But like, I find them especially useful whenever I'm watching like Irish or Scottish movies in particular. My next one, you don't even really need to be a fan of this particular artist's music to enjoy this one, which is a short film that came out last year and is directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. and features Radiohead's Tom York basically doing Buster Keaton-esque pratfalls through like a Metropolis kind of setting. And the movie's called, the short film's called Anima, which is a companion to an album that Tom York put out. It's only 15 minutes, but in that runtime, it manages to pack in like four different songs, and there's like some genuine little laughs and funny moments in it. And then there's also some really tender emotion in there too. The last song that they use is this absolutely devastating song called Dawn Chorus that was one of my favorites from last year. My mom gave it a watch. This is always one of my litmus tests. My mom gave it a watch a while back, and she doesn't really dig Radiohead that much, and she's not a big sci-fi fan either, which is definitely the aesthetic this movie has. And she was still kind of won over by it. So I'm a big fan of that one because it's only 15 minutes. I never mind throwing that one on.
Yeah, and that's on Netflix, right?
Yep, streaming on Netflix.
So yeah, my next one was, I wanted to go with an Edgar Wright movie, but the obvious one would have been Shaun of the Dead. So I skipped that one, and I went straight to Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which another one that is, I feel like, was criminally underseen when it was out and is just so good. And it's an adaptation of a comic book. It's all about Scott Pilgrim, who falls in love with a lady, but then has to fight her seven deadly exes, and the fight sequences are absolutely ridiculous. All of the visual aesthetics are inspired by video games, and the way that it incorporates all of that, all of the video game visual elements, lends for just a really fun movie.
It's one of the better things based off of like comic books or graphic novels that actually does a great job of feeling like comic books and graphic novels.
Yeah, without turning into like a parody of something trying to be about a comic book.
Yeah, and then the cast in that movie is kind of an embarrassment of riches looking backward.
Yeah, too. I mean, Captain America's in there. Yeah, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
One of the Culkins.
Yeah, the whole relationship between him and Scott Pilgrim is absolutely wonderful. The roommate thing. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's just like it really hit that kind of bittersweet, you know, vibe of being in your, you know, early 20s and, you know, falling in love and not having a job and all of these other elements that really subtly, you know, it got the vibe of it. Really, really nice. I love that movie.
It's a good emo movie for 20-year-olds or 20-something.
It is. It totally is. Yeah, and that's on Netflix. And everybody needs to watch it.
Okay, I'm going dark now for you because I know you like those ones. Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
Isn't that a good one? It's where you say, wow, Chris Pine can act. I really enjoyed it because I didn't know where I was going. And I liked seeing people that you would probably see in another arena, like the mother on American Housewife, who played a waitress, and she was really good in that. And I thought, why didn't her career go in this direction instead of a sitcom? But I really, I enjoyed that a lot. And I thought it gave me a lot of fodder for thinking.
Yeah. Kind of like Logan Lucky, where it's, there's a lot of, I mean, it's not even really subtext. It's full on text about, you know, class war and, you know, income disparity and, you know, I mean, like we were talking about earlier, you know, just the, you know, helplessness to a point about what you can accomplish. And these guys kind of reached out. Yeah, definitely don't want to spoil anything about the way, you know, things wrap up. But that, really well done film.
Yeah, I absolutely love that one, too. And I love, because I think they maybe do occasionally get compared. I absolutely love No Country for Old Men, and that's probably one of my all-time favorites, but that movie is way more hermetically sealed from the outside world than Hell or High Water is, like you were kind of saying, Chris, which is one thing I appreciate so much about Hell or High Water, as well as the movie that Taylor Sheridan worked on right after this, which was Wind River, which that movie is also a punch in the gut.
Right.
And that's another one where, I mean, there is no real subtext to it. All of the political text in Wind River is, like, right there, and yeah, I can't say enough good things about that one either, but that's not one that, like, after I saw it, I'm like, I can't wait to go and rewatch that. It hurts. That movie really does hurt.
The thing about that movie is that we do see cases exactly like that in our area. And it's not the situation is not changing. And that really is one that should be a wake-up call for a lot of people.
Well, and realistically, that movie, like, that movie could just as easily have been made during, like, the themes in that one and the way it plays out could have been made during the Great Depression, and you wouldn't have had to change the plot or the story at all.
Yeah, it's like a Grapes of Wrath meets Bonnie and Clyde type thing.
Yeah. And while we're talking about Taylor Sheridan still, too, another movie of his that's definitely rewatchable. I don't know if it's a comfort necessarily because it's not a comforting movie, but Sicario is another endlessly rewatchable movie. And that one, you talk about embarrassment of riches in terms of like directing and cinematography and writing. That has to be one of the better movies that's come out in the past like half decade or so.
What did you think of the sequel to it?
I actually like the sequel. Obviously, tonally, it's a lot different and is more of like a less of a thriller and more of an action kind of movie almost. But I still actually really dug the sequel too.
Like the difference between Alien and Aliens.
Almost, yeah. Not quite as extreme of a difference, but getting there.
Jared's got to have a musical on that list. I know he's got a musical in there somewhere.
Well, my last one kind of counts as that, I suppose, because it really is a companion to a an album. But my next one, appropriately enough, is also a Western. And as we were kind of talking about at the beginning, a lot of people are, for some deeply misguided reason right now, watching Contagion. Don't do that. Stop it. Cut it out. If you absolutely like insist on watching some like paranoid kind of movie right now, you should at least watch something that's a little bit more abstract and removed from our present hellscape. Instead of watching something like that, you should watch something that spills out across a sun-beaten Western hellscape. And what I'm teasing about is a 1966 movie called The Shooting, which is almost like The Thing, but with horses. Monty Hellman made the movie, and he also made a drag racing cult classic called Tulane Blacktop. And basically, this movie is like the earliest example of an acid Western. So it's got some like psychedelic elements to it. It has a really, really young Jack Nicholson in it and in a supporting role. Even for a Western, it's tense. Unlike a lot of other Westerns, it's really weird in parts. And then it absolutely has nothing to say about pandemics, so you're safe in that realm too. And then it's also free on Tubi, which is a fairly non-committal platform as far as streaming services go.
Criterion put that one out on DVD and Blu-ray, like if you where it was like a two-pack where it was The Shootist or The Shooting.
Yep, The Shooting, and then also Ride the Whirlwind, I think, is the other one. Yep, yes. I have that. Yeah, it's I really love that movie quite a bit because I think just blending some like psychedelic elements with a Western is just an ingenious move and one I wish more would do. I know, like, obviously Jim Jarmusch did that with Dead Man, and I guess
Ghost Dog did it. Threw away.
Eat Ghost Dog too, but yeah, there needs to be more acid Westerns, basically.
Totally agree. The next one that I picked, I mean, I figured I would have to get a Tarantino on there, and I would have said Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I figured everyone's probably already seen that one, and the one that I honestly find myself coming back to the most was Jackie Brown.
Yes, that's where I was hoping you were going.
Just like The Nice Guys, it's one where, I mean, the plot is so dense. I mean, there's just so many things that happen. There's so many, you know, double crosses and these twists that happen and, you know, things that are hidden from the audience. And then you see it later on. And and I mean, all of the acting is just great. And it's, I mean, yeah. It's one that I just, keep coming back to and love it so much.
Yeah, that one's near the top of my favorite Tarantino movies because of just how much of a fun kind of hang it is. Bruce, where does that one rank for you for Tarantino movies?
I like it. I like it. It's not one of the bad ones. like, so it's Grindhouse not, it's not, is one of my bad ones.
I was going to say, it's not Death Proof.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, no, I like Jackie Brown. I like Inglourious Basterds, and I like The Hateful Eight that you liked. I think you liked that one, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I would not recommend watching that one right now. That one maybe isn't a good watch for right now.
I'm going to pick one that you've probably seen a jillion times. And I usually think that that's a good sign of something I would want to watch in a time like this. Mm-hmm. But I have to make a little kind of caveat with all of this. You got to go back to the original, not watch what you've seen 20 million times on TV. And that's National Lampoon's Vacation. The original Vacation that hasn't been edited, where they cut out the swearing and everything and all the kind of dirty parts, is really, really good. And I can laugh all the time at it.
Did John Hughes write the script for that? I know that it's based on a story that he wrote for National Lampoon.
Yeah. I don't know if he wrote the script, but he was definitely involved with it because he did a thing where his family was going to Disneyland and it was in the National Lampoon and it was close to this, but they've really taken it and gone off the deep end with it. But I love that movie. And every time it's on, I will sit there and then I think, oh no, I want to hear the swearing, because when Clark goes off on all these things, it's exactly my dad.
My dad also had moments like that when, you know, the stress of family life kind of, you know, piled up and then, you know, hit that breaking point. And yeah.
Well, especially when everyone's piled into a car.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you've been on that trip. You know, you have.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And also in that movie, just one of many great cameos in John Hughes things from John Candy, which I love when he pops up in that. I love when he pops up in Home Alone. Just any time he popped up in something for even like the small little parts was always welcome. My, I guess, fifth and final one should come as no surprise to anyone that knows me at all. Just go watch Drive from 2011. It's super flashy. It's cool to look at. It's artsy, but it's not like burying you under mounds and mounds of like philosophical quandaries. Some of the action set pieces in it are really cool, especially the chase scene kind of going along the mountain ridges outside of L.A. We were talking about the embarrassment of riches earlier with the cast. The cast in this one is embarrassment of riches, too, because you have Ryan Gosling and Carey Mulligan, of course, but then also Cranston, Albert Brooks, Christina Hendricks, Ron Perlman, Star Wars, Thirst Trap, Oscar Isaac. and then the soundtrack, too, is still just one of the absolute best and probably most influential of the past decade. I don't think you get a lot of the Stranger Things, like synth music kind of stuff that's everywhere in TV and movies now without Drive. And it's easy just to put on and pick up wherever it's at, because like the plot in this one doesn't really matter too much.
That was Cliff Martinez who did the score for that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, he's done a bunch of Soderbergh movies as well. That movie is absolutely killer. And Albert Brooks in that movie is just, I mean, 10 times better than he has any right to be.
He's a great bad guy, and I wish he was a bad guy in more stuff, because he kills it as a bad guy in that movie.
And I mean, honestly, I think any of those like early comedies that he did would fit in. Modern Romance, Defending Your Life. I mean, those are all movies that are exactly the same kind of, like, you know, comfort vibe for me.
Okay, yeah, what's yours, Chris?
So the last one that I went with is a little bit of a curveball. I mean, I feel like it had to be some kind of a big popcorn movie that everybody would agree on. And then, like, I wanted to do Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. That's the one that I'm going to pick. I feel like Raiders of the Lost Ark is the better film. And I still have a real soft spot in my heart for Temple of Doom. But there's just something about Last Crusade where it's, I mean, the two of those guys together, Sean Connery and Harrison Ford, and just chewing scenery together. I feel like that has some of the best set pieces of the entire series of films. And yeah, I mean, there's just so much great comedy to it. And yeah, I absolutely love it so much.
Is this the one with River Phoenix?
Yeah, that entire like opening sequence, you know, showing young Indiana Jones is just sets the stage for the whole thing and is absolutely fantastic.
I admittedly have not seen the second Indiana Jones movie or the third Indiana Jones movie start to finish. I've seen most of both of those like on TV at this point, but I don't think I've ever actually sat down and watched either one of those start to finish.
Well, I know Last Crusade is on Netflix. So I would assume the others are as well.
Yeah. Jared, you can't call yourself a human unless you've watched all of the Indiana Jones movies.
So what about you, Bruce? What do you got for your last one?
Okay, my last one is actually, I hope, a tie to something we can talk about later. And that's a sports movie. Mm-hmm. And it's something that right now is very kind of touching because kids can't do their basketball tournaments. They're ending their seasons without ending their seasons. And that's Hoosiers. And it speaks so much to what a small town is all about, which is your sports team. And how this little town went to the state tournament and all the people had buy-in. And it shows that kind of support that you don't see everywhere. But I think Hoosiers is a great film to watch at this time.
Admittedly, I actually hate that movie and can't stand it.
Why? Jared, no, I'm drumming you out. Why don't you like it?
It like is one of those kind of like sports movies that just registers as like cheesy to me, and I've never been the biggest fan of cheesier sports movies. Like, I don't like Field of Dreams either, for what it's worth. And
you're revoking your card right now.
But no, like my favorite like high school sports movie probably still is more like a like Friday Night Lights is one I absolutely love and is like one of my personal favorites, but. Yeah, I just never got on the Hoosiers bandwagon.
You go back.
That the speech that he gives in the empty gym is cool, but yeah.
whenever you see a basketball hoop, you will think about the measuring and that it's the same distance as it is in our school.
I think also maybe I don't know, I'm annoyed by that movie too, because the team that they face at the end, like, historically, it actually has a way more interesting story than, like, the Hoosiers team does, because it was more of, like, an integrated team than the Hoosiers team was. And so I'm like, where was that movie at instead of one about Hoosiers?
I was doing a dig through all of the basketball movies. I found 32 of them. So if you want to do a bracket, you can have 32 movies. But there are a lot of very, very similar films. It's like, it's almost a template for making a sports film. It's always an underdog team that isn't going to win with a coach that's kind of, you know, iffy. And then how the people, there's usually some drunk in town who gets behind them. But there are a lot of these very similar things that nobody really has gone off the template to really create a new basketball film. But it's interesting.
A lot of stock.
And in the 90s, they were real huge. So
that's probably another reason, though, too, even though it doesn't like upset the apple cart too much. But I do like that in Friday Night Lights, it's a team that's expected to win, having to deal with that pressure. Because that's like a very subtle but really interesting kind of inversion, I think, of like, what is it like when you have to deal with the stress of just being expected to mow everyone down as a team?
You know, when you talk about Friday Night Lights, I actually like the series better than the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those TV series that I could watch forever. And when the finale came, I didn't want it to come because I didn't want to say goodbye to those characters. And I've interviewed a lot of the actors who were in that show because I was just nuts about it. And finally, one had to turn to me and say, all right, it's time to move on.
Well, I think that's a good spot, because we don't want to get too into the sports stuff, because that's what we'll probably be talking about next time, assuming that, you know, all like theaters don't reopen and movies start playing again anytime soon. So everybody can definitely wait to hear more about that. I know, Bruce, you've got there's an article on Sioux City that you wrote about all sports movies.
Yeah, it should be running in some of the other Lee papers, so you'll be able to see all 32 basketball films, and you'll be able to do your own brackets to vote down which is the worst or the best, and I bet I know what Hoosiers is going to do for Jared, right? But I want to throw you two more things to binge this weekend before you start looking at all these movies.
Yeah.
One is, I want you to go to Netflix and watch Cheer. If you have not watched Cheer, I want you to see it. Even though you hate cheerleaders, you don't like this concept, I think it's a really fun reality show that will change your opinion about all the kind of negative things that you've been seeing. And when you can cheer these kids on, you're going to really love it. And then if you want to go dark, the new season of Ozark premieres this week, and you will love it.
Right now, my big one, because it's probably my favorite show on TV, is Better Call Saul. So that's been the one I've been most just buried in right now in terms of TV shows. But yeah, I've heard really good things about Cheer, and I know it's the same guy that also did Last Chance U, which is
like
a gut punch of a show, too.
If anybody hasn't watched The Outsider on HBO, that's one that is... I don't know if it's going to work as well, like, barreling through it, like, episode to episode to episode, but it's, yeah, that's one that is just absolutely amazing, and the less anybody knows about that show going into it, I think the more enjoyable it'll be in the long run. But yeah, there's just so many tonal twists and turns. Like, I think each of, like, the first four episodes set up a completely different style of TV show, and yeah, it's really fantastic. So you got some, we got some bonus TV recommendations out of us.
Yes.
Bruce, where can people find you?
You can go to SiouxCityJournal.com, and you should be able to see everything there. You'll also find me on Twitter at Sue Bruce, Instagram at Sue Bruce. You'll find me on Facebook, Bruce Miller.
Jared?
You can find me in my home with the windows drawn, reading, I guess, Batman graphic novels right now, and just unnecessarily scrolling through Twitter, expecting there to be good news at any moment.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to have to keep holding our breath. But
yeah, it goes.
I'm Chris Lay. You can find me on Twitter at TotesChris. I'm on Instagram at DudeBroChris. Various other places. If you just search, you'll find me. And so thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you guys so much for joining me from where you're at. And next time around, we'll be talking about sports movies.
So that was our roundup of movies that Bruce, Jared, and I find especially comforting. Like I said in the beginning, there will be links in the show notes to where you can stream all of those as of at least the day that the episode drops. So click on through and find them there. You can subscribe to the show on Apple and Spotify and Stitcher and, you know, wherever else you listen to podcasts, and leave us a comment there. Give us a review, a nice positive review. In the review, you can even say what your personal top five favorite comfort movies are, and we will mention those in 2 weeks for our next episode. Our next episode will be all about sports movies, so make sure you tune in there. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you have enjoyed it and that you are all taking care of yourselves out there, washing hands, social distancing, all that good stuff.